Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Friday, June 13th and I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warit Ahmed and we've got a packed show for you today. We're going to be discussing firstly how Egypt is going to completely revamp the Giza Pyramid site with $30 million. And secondly, after Israeli strikes on Iran, they've triggered regional tensions that have caused oil prices to go up. And after Khalij Times exit, Michael Jabri Pickett has launched new Dubai-focused media brand. And finally, Talabat is prioritizing profit and patience over actually expanding into Saudi.
And the very first news of the day is Egypt. They have officially unveiled a $30 million transformation of the Giza Pyramid site, one of the world's most iconic tourist destinations. The overhaul comes as part of a public-private partnership with Orascom Pyramids Entertainment, a firm run by Egyptian billionaire Naguib Saweris.
Now, the revamp, first initiated in 2018, tackles long-standing issues that people have complained about, like overcrowding, aggressive hawkers, and dated infrastructure. So visitors will now enter through a new main gate, explore the site via hop-on, hop-off buses, which we have never seen before, and enjoy upgraded facilities and formal vendor zones.
One of the highlights is Khufu's, a fine dining restaurant overlooking the ancient monuments. The entire area has also been made car-free, creating a more relaxed and immersive experience for the expected 2.5 million annual visitors.
Now, it is actually Orascom Pyramids Entertainment, led by Naguib Saweris, which will manage the day-to-day operations for the next 11 years. Now, while the Egyptian government retains control over ticketing and security, the company will generate revenue from tours, sponsorships, and commercial leasing.
And the relaunch coincides with the July 3 opening of the $1 billion Grand Egyptian Museum. Nearby, together, both landmarks signal Egypt's renewed push to revive tourism and cement its status as a global cultural powerhouse.
And I think that, you know, it's about time that they do this, because I read something that was so interesting and it really stood out to me. And basically, Orascom Pyramids Entertainment, the company led by Naguib Saweris, you know, his team, they came out and said that it is absolutely unacceptable that one of the world's seven wonders only gets over 1 million foreigners per year. And I know you're probably thinking, you know, 1 million is still a big number. No, it's not a big number when you compare it to Rome, where they have over 12 million foreigners visiting per year. You know,
Let's compare it to Dubai and Saudi also. If I remember correctly, nearly 18 million visitors in Dubai last year. And Saudi was something 17. So imagine, it's like 17 times more in Saudi. And I won't compare it to Saudi more. I will compare it to, because Saudi tourists also, there's the holy sites and all that tourism numbers also get added. But just compare it to Dubai or UAE. It's like very small in comparison to Egypt. So only 1 million visitors. To be honest, he's completely right. It's too less, and it's one of the seven wonders of the world.
It's crazy.
So that's the most important. Yeah. So that's the most important part. And yeah, hopefully this all will help them.
I think for me, what stood out to me the most is actually at the heart of all of this, you have Orascom Pyramids Entertainment, and that it is actually Egypt's richest man, Naguib Saweris.
Second.
Who
his brother Nassef is.
I know, but
their family is the richest family.
Because they're the richest family, I consider him the richest too. But imagine you say it like you hate it. But basically, Naguib, he is at the heart of all of this. Yeah. He's at the heart of this. He is advising the government. You know, he is telling them that you guys can't have such low expectations for such a large monument. Like, we can do more with this. We're not taking enough advantage of this.
So, I think hopefully all of this will help Egypt recover because economically they're not doing good. I had a long chat with Rich. He recently went, remember? I think, I don't remember the occasion, but he went to Egypt and I was asking him, like, how does it look like? And he was very clear that if any of you has gone to the Dubai Safari Park, because that is what I was like, when he was explaining everything, okay, pavilions and areas, and every area has a reception, and then there is a main entrance. So Rich told a very nice story of how there's a main entrance, you buy the ticket, then you can go to like multiple places, and eventually there's the Grand Egyptian Museum, so you can go there. So a lot of important things that Rich told me is, the highlight of what Rich told me was that all the things have been created in a way that they give you an experience. Not just like, okay, you're going, it's the pyramids, you look at it, maybe you climb it. But he told me that there's two, there's a small one and there's a big one. And I think the ticket price is higher for the bigger one and everyone really wants. It's like coming to Dubai and going to Burj Al Arab and not Burj Khalifa. You want to go to the Burj Khalifa also. Burj Al Arab is a different experience, Burj Khalifa. So, yeah, a lot of details. But the main thing is that the Egyptian, Grand Egyptian Museum, they sent out a very nice, creepy kind of a feel video, right? You listen to the voiceover and sound.
I did not find it creepy.
No, it was kind of like a horror feel to it. Otherwise, very lighthearted, very chirpy, very excited videos. The Grand Egyptian.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the mummy.
The mummies are here and this is happening. I'm like, okay, good feel. But yeah, the Grand Egyptian Museum is going to open on July 3, and that is why this holds a lot of importance, because then the whole project will finally take that final shape where they're expecting a lot of increase in the number of visitors. And next up, this morning in UAE and last night in UAE, the biggest news in terms of geopolitics and in terms of business also for the next few days came out. So oil prices have gone up and global markets took a hit early Friday. Asian markets are down. I was just looking, trying to open DFM. It's hanging, but now it's open. It's 4 points down. ADX is 2 points down, nearly 2 points down as soon as they open. Literally, the whole global market took a hit early Friday following Israeli airstrikes on Iranian military and nuclear sites. The strikes reportedly killed senior members of Iran's Revolutionary Guard and key nuclear scientists, sparking fears of broader regional escalation. Just an update before word jumps in that Iran has launched 200 drones. It's been confirmed. They've announced it. Israel has confirmed that they have launched 200 drones. So it's a very moving story. And as more things come, we'll tell you.
So Brent crude jumped more than 9%, reaching its highest level in nearly 5 months. Energy markets reacted swiftly as investors braced for supply disruptions in the oil-rich Middle East, a region that is already on edge.
Yeah, and Asian markets yield at Friday's open. Stocks across the region fell sharply amid rising geopolitical tensions. U.S. stock futures, which are usually jumping up and down even when the market is closed, also reflected glowing investor anxiety. S&P E-minis dropped 1.7%. Nasdaq futures slipped 1.8%.
And in the Gulf, nearly all major Middle Eastern markets closed in the red on Thursday ahead of the anticipated strikes. The Dubai Financial Market and Abu Dhabi Securities Exchange are expected to follow suit when trading resumes on Friday today.
And with markets now on high alert, analysts are watching closely for any further military responses. And Iran has responded finally. Let's see what happens. It's a very political, geopolitical kind of a story, but there's always business ramifications for all these stories because markets suffer, oil prices are up because as soon as these tensions escalate, oil production goes down because that country is not busy churning out oil, it's busy fighting. So let's see what happens. It was predicted by Trump yesterday, actually. He called all the US staff from a lot of Middle Eastern bases, especially Kuwait, because Kuwait reported it themselves through the government news agency, that all the U.S. non-essential staff has been called back to U.S. or at least safe places outside of Middle East. And then he said that, Israel is planning to do it, but I've told them not to. So it's very weird that U.S., who has supported Israel throughout the Gaza genocide, throughout the Lebanon problems that they've caused, wherever Israel goes, U.S. has always backed them, saying, oh, this is their right to self-defense.
Yeah, and they backed them with a lot of money, too.
But this time, with the Iran attack, and the thing is that U.S. and Iran are going to Oman to talk about their nuclear deal. Israel wants to shut down Iranian nuclear program. Iran doesn't want to do that. But they were going to sit down in Oman soon. And I don't know what happened. Israel randomly, out of nowhere, they struck Iran. So it's very complicated. US has taken itself out. They're like, we don't know. Yeah. We are not supporting them. It's in no way from our side. We don't support Israel on this.
Look, I think with this story, with this entire story, Majid, is that certain business analysts have predicted this. Yeah. They have said that the reason for why Trump, when he came to the Gulf, the reason why he received so much money from Saudi Arabia, from Qatar, from the UAE, is fear of an attack of their allies that are grounded around them geographically. So you know, a lot of people clearly saw this coming, and it's interesting why I think that money that the Gulf countries gave Trump, all those trillions of dollars, not billions, were to prepare for today.
Yeah, it's going to be a long day because of this, because obviously markets just opened, they're in red, but they will be very like bad today. Expect red color all over the markets. I was reading a very funny thing that crypto markets also get affected by all of this now. And someone was saying that it shows that the crypto market has matured enough that it gets affected by all the geopolitical things and all the business things. Anything that happens in the world, somehow the crypto market also suffers. Before, it was considered a safe haven because people would take money out of the markets and put it in crypto. But now the crypto market also fluctuates because of these problems.
And you know, Majid,
so people
honestly,
are going to gold.
Honestly, investor fear, it does make so much sense because, you know, I was walking in. I'll give you this example today to work. And I was telling Majid how when I was walking out of my house and I ordered the taxi, my dad was like, Ward, come upstairs. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I got to get to work. And he was like, you know that Israel attacked Iran.
Yeah.
Are you sure you have work today? What if they call off the day? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And see, I understood where his fear and his paranoia were coming from because, you know, this is somebody, my dad is somebody, he survived the Sudanese civil war. His house was being, what's it called? His bullets were rampaging the area in which he lived in Khartoum. And seeing what happened to Sudan after the civil war that is still ongoing, many people lost their businesses. So it makes sense why investors have so much fear because, it's not to be underestimated. When things like this happen, people's businesses do get affected. Yeah. Operations do get affected, whether it's people not being able to go to work, whether it's people not being able to go to operational sites, these things do happen.
General anxiety of being anywhere near whatever is happening, and it affects your work, it affects your productivity. So you can have like 100 angles on it. Another problem that will be caused, like if you talk about the broader global level, supply chains get disrupted because a lot of things are going from here and there due to the fears of attack. We've seen that in Egypt, their port has been the completely forgot the name, but yeah, Suez Canal, we've seen over the years, like nearly last year, they lost $8 billion just because the trade was slow and it actually halted because of the Houthi attacks, because they support Palestine against Israel. So all of this somehow is so much connected with business that someone is losing something. People who do stock market, like as a job, as a business, they lose a lot of money or they stay put for like 2-3 months. They are on hold because they can't sell and they can't buy. Because, if they have a lot of money, they buy at this time because the markets are low. They get in at a cheaper price, but they can't sell. They can't liquidate. So it's a lot of problems. But hopefully, this gets resolved as soon as possible so no one gets affected, because this is now being called a Middle Eastern problem. Because Trump didn't just pull people out of Iran or Israel or anywhere. He pulled out of a lot of Middle Eastern countries. We don't have confirmed reports about UAE and Saudi and all the other major players, but it will happen. So it's being called a Middle Eastern problem and a Middle Eastern tension. So hopefully everything is fine. If you guys have anxiety, just talk to your family, hug your kids. Just stay calm, because at the end of the day, it is at the back of your mind. It is at the back of anyone's mind who has family somewhere or friends somewhere. So yeah. Just try to go through it. By the way,
people never expect this.
Yeah.
People never actually expect these things.
Imagine
to
US didn't expect that it's going to happen. Trump just yesterday guessed and they did it. So it's going to be a very weird 2-3 days. Just try to, if you are like want to stay updated, we're there. We'll try to cover all the business angles on it. But yeah. Some good news from Dubai also. Michael Jaffrey Pickett, the former editor-in-chief of Khaleej Times, has launched a new lifestyle media company following his exit from the legacy newspaper. The new venture is called This Is Dubai.
He didn't exactly exit. He was fired, which he broke the news for, very confidently. Now, the digital-first brand is already active on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. So Jaffrey Pickett says the platform is visually led, editorially credible, and culturally fluent. Now, focused on celebrating life in Dubai through high-impact, authentic storytelling.
I didn't like the color theme, but yeah, I think they're trying to do something different, but the color theme is a little bland.
Their Instagram caption was really nice. They basically said the algorithm needs more culture.
Yeah. So in a LinkedIn post, Jaffrey Pickett explained the vision behind the new platform. We decode, document, and celebrate what it means to live, work, and create in Dubai. He emphasized the strong aesthetic sensibility rooted in real-life experiences.
So Jaffrey Pickett brings over, which I think is completely insane, 2 decades of media leadership experience. Before Khaleej Times, he had senior roles at top regional publications, including The National, editorial director at Arabian Business, editor-in-chief at the Qatar Foundation.
And his abrupt departure from Khaleej Times after just 16 months made headlines, but his next chapter seems firmly focused on storytelling that reflects modern Dubai. Whether the project finds its audience remains to be seen, but it's already generating some buzz. A lot of people are talking about it. Let's see. Actually, one of the comments was our sister company, our main company, like our main business is Love in Dubai. And one person commented, actually, is it something like Love in? And yeah. I think every person, we can't say that Love in is the only brand. It is one of the best brands, no doubt about it. But a lot of other brands have tried. Majority of them have failed. It's like the startup story. There is a Death Valley theory, which is with startups, that all startups, every startup, nearly 90% of the startups actually, fail in the first 3 years. So those first 3 years are critical. I hope we had Rich today here, and we could have asked him, like, what happens in the first 3 years? How do you just stay put and go through those first difficult years?
Look, media, honestly, media is such a tough industry. Yeah. And I feel that, you know, we've seen this in Monify. You know,
the media startup. Very recent example.
Yeah, very recent example. So the media startup that was launched last year of November by Naguib Sawiris. You know, they hired a lot of people. They hired this really famous influencer, Carly Upton, Issa, like a lot of people. And then what happens after 3 months? They lay off more than 80% of their staff. First, they start with the freelancers. They sack all of them. Then they go to the main people. They're like, okay, who do we not need here? And then they cancel a lot of their shows. And then, you know, now what we're seeing is Monify has they've changed their CEO. Naguib has appointed his daughter Lana. Was that her name? He appointed his
Lana
daughter.
Savides.
He appointed his daughter to lead the company as CEO. But you know, we've seen it with Monify, and with Monify, you know, it's not even to be harsh when I'm mentioning that they had all of these layoffs. It's more of that this is media, and media is an extremely I feel tough industry to crack into.
Also very you competitive, cannot, I think.
And you know why? It's so I don't just think it's competitive, Majid. It is because it is not that easy to manipulate the public.
Yeah.
You know, like it's the public that
not
controls.
Not even manipulate.
Like, no, because it's a public that controls how well you do. It literally all lies on, do we want to click your video? Do we like what you're posting? Do we
will
like
we
your content?
Will we share it with family, friends, anyone?
Exactly. Will it make conversation? So it is a very difficult industry. And in even like technically, like we saw what happened with IMI when they tried to acquire Telegraph in the UK. So IMI, it's Bavabi based, and their portfolio of brands, it's completely impressive. I believe
the
they
national.
Have Yeah, the National, CNN Arabia. They also have a joint venture with Sky News.
Yeah.
And so basically what happened is they tried to acquire 50% of Telegraph in the UK, but that did not end up working out because of the fact that the UK government was like, no, we have a problem with a Middle Eastern news company trying to acquire a news asset of ours that we can use to spread propaganda.
It's not that the UK wanted
way,
it to use
propaganda,
it.
Propaganda is not necessarily a bad thing, Majid. All news outlets...
propaganda is a bad term. It was coined as a term to spread...
Because all news outlets do it.
The father of propaganda himself said that it's a way to manipulate and manipulate negatively the...
He was Sigmund Freud's cousin. But I think we're doing it unconsciously sometimes, though. We do it unconsciously.
So the opposite of propaganda is PR.
Yeah.
So public relations. So public relations is the nice term because you actually build relations with public. Propaganda in itself, the word was coined during when Russia and America had a Cold War going on. And Edward Bernays, he's the father of PR and he coined the term propaganda to say that Russia is doing propaganda. So he basically wanted to differentiate between what his theories
were. What's his name again?
Edward Bernays. He's the nephew of Sigmund Freud, the famous psychologist. So Edward Bernays is the father of PR. He coined the term. The problem is that propaganda, to be honest, I sometimes don't think that propaganda is bad also. But by default, by term, by definition, and by origin, propaganda is negative.
Majid, I understand
but
the
British
origin.
Britain didn't want Telegraph to stay there to do propaganda.
I mean it in the sense of that for the UK government, in the end of the day, they will be afraid to...
Someone else can come and do propaganda using
and
their...
IMI will come and do propaganda. Yeah. For them, it is more of... Because we have seen how, for ages, the West has gone after the Middle East. For the UK government, they don't want, they don't want a Middle Eastern company coming in and portraying us in a positive light in which we actually do exist.
Yeah.
Also, I think that the term propaganda is coined very negatively. In the end of the day, whatever country you're in, if you're covering it, what are you going to do? You're going to try and cover it in a more positive limelight.
Yeah.
That is what it is in the end of the day because you live there, because you might be biased. But beside the point, they tried to purchase it for 50%. That did not work because the UK government would not allow it. They would only allow them maximum of 15%.
Yeah.
And now as the deal is going forward with IMI getting 15% and what's it called? And Redbird, the US-based company, getting 85%. What's basically happening is that their CEO, Lebanese Rani Rand, is stepping down.
Yeah.
He's stepping down from the company. And you can clearly see how this is such a tough industry.
Yeah.
You know, there is so much that does go into it.
Yeah. And apart from that, money-wise also, since the rise of the PR whole industry, where people will just send you something, a gift or a mango box, since this is the season, they'll be like, please cover our news. A lot of people, to be honest, I would put the onus on media industry as well. A lot of journalists, I won't take names, but in my last company events, we literally gave away vouchers to them. Carrefour vouchers, Spinneys vouchers.
How much were they worth?
100 dirhams, 200 dirhams.
My mom would have loved that.
And people actually came. And I was like, why are you giving 100 dirham Carrefour? No one will come. There are like flocks of them coming. And I was like, okay, this is the money aspect that people are not ready to spend. A client has something, they're launching something. They would go to a PR company, pay them some amount and say, do PR for us. The PR company in return says, okay, we'll give them this free, but we won't pay them. So somehow PR became the middle guy between the clients who actually have the money to spend on a launch marketing and the media company which is actually doing it. And I'm not saying PR companies are bad. Some PR companies actually facilitate the process. The big ones, the good ones.
They also block off opportunities, by the way.
Think of it, again, I'll give you, take it in the negative basket.
I'm not taking it in a negative basket, but think of it like this. Say, Majid, I'm not going to use myself because, you know, we're business journalists. But say like a podcaster, they want to go and they want to do a podcast with Mohammed bin Ghati. I'm just giving you an example, right? They can't exactly go directly to him and speak to him, right? They can't.
Until and unless they know someone in the company very high.
They have to go through what?
The marketing or the PR agency.
And often what happens with these PRs, you know what they're basically doing? They're trying to tick off their targets. They're trying to tick off their targets, meet their commercial goals, whatever it is. And that podcaster might go to them and be like, hey, I want to have a discussion with him. Yeah. And it might not go through. But it's not even actually because the big guy said no. It's because the PR agents are they don't believe in the vision because they are too busy scrambling for so much. Do you get what I'm saying?
You have to understand, like, see, if a good podcaster goes and he can add value to Mohammed bin Ghati, which is very difficult at this time, like big names, you actually don't add value to their positioning. They add value to your podcast. But let's talk about a smaller person.
You get my perspective, right?
Yeah, I understand. They can block you.
Can block off opportunities
but then,
sometimes.
See, it's then it becomes a two-way street where the influencer or the podcaster will be like, okay, I'll cover 2-3 clients for you free. I'll make their CEO sit with in my podcast for free so I can gain access to that guy.
Yeah.
So somehow, even then, the monetary aspect of earning from media is like thrown out of the window. It's just, you give me this, you scratch my back, I scratch your back. But if I scratch your back, you won't pay me for it because someday you promise to scratch my back. So monetarily, it's very difficult to earn from media as well. So he will face a lot of problems. How does he make it, like, whatever is going in, the money that's going in, obviously, a lot of money will go in to register the company, to hire people to do the job. They hired one of our
I just really think, Majid, that the middleman is the worst curse to ever exist. Yeah. And I've experienced this firsthand. When I've actually gone to the founder and I've requested something, instead of speaking to their PR agents, the process has gone very quickly. Yeah. I've been able to get what I need. But the PR agents, I don't know what's going on with them, but I don't know. Something is up.
Yeah, they need to be better. They need to do better. But they're doing good. Some of them are doing a great job, to be honest. We work with a lot of them because we are a media company. And that is why we
must discuss it. I think most of them are doing a good job. Yeah.
I'm just saying
consider things creatively more so than try and meet the target, you know?
Yeah. And talking about marketing, we talked about how IPOs have become a marketing tool for a lot of companies. But since months after its record-breaking $2 billion IPO on the Dubai financial market, Talabat, which is owned by the German giant Delivery Hero, is steering clear of Saudi Arabia. For now, CEO Tomaso Rodriguez told CNBC that the delivery giant is focusing on margins, loyalty, and selective acquisitions instead of chasing market size.
So Rodriguez emphasized that Talabat isn't aiming to become a super app, saying if you don't have a right to win in a category, you shouldn't be there. So Talabat operates in 8 MENA markets with over 6.5 million active monthly users and claims to lead every single one of them.
And on Saudi Arabia, Tomaso Rodriguez said Talabat could enter tomorrow, but the return on investment is stronger in existing markets. He hinted that any future Saudi play would likely come through mergers and acquisitions, not organic growth.
And earlier this year, Talabat acquired InstaShop for $32 million, fully funded from internal cash. The move highlights Talabat's strategy to buy when it actually makes sense. Interestingly, only a third of InstaShop's users were already Talabat customers, offering cross-platform potential.
And from launching postpaid, a buy now, pay later feature, to exploring financing for vendors, Talabat is digging deeper rather than wider. As Rodriguez put it, we're not empire building. We're building where we can structurally win. A patient but powerful play in a region defined by rapid expansion.
Oh, Majid, you know, he mentioned something that is so interesting there. He was like, out of the 6.5 million monthly users that Talabat has, every single one of them is active. And I understand exactly what he means. It's not that they don't want Saudi. Saudi is like it's the Middle East sweetheart. Who would not want her?
And right now it's booming.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the perfect spot. It's just more of, I understand them because they want, they want to be there when every single person is actually active on the platform. What they're doing is they're prioritizing actually taking care of their existing customers, then focusing on getting more customers and not being able to manage all of the cities. So I think that it makes a lot of sense.
There's another problem why he's not going there right now, because there's so much competition already happening there.
Ooh, with Keita, we've seen Keita is there.
So he has a nice strategy that consolidate in his already present markets, becomes so strong in those markets that he doesn't have to even think
about it.
And then take on a new challenge. So it's good. He doesn't want the already established markets. So very smart. Tommaso is a very smart guy. We've seen it in the Talabat IPO, the biggest tech IPO of last year. This year, we're waiting for tech IPOs. There's a lot of rumors, stories, comments from founders for 2026, 2027. Some may go this year as well. But let's see. Whenever it happens, we'll tell you.
Yes, let's see. And that's a wrap for today, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us across all social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
This has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners across all platforms. You make this possible. If you're one of them, we appreciate you. And we have the Smashy Sports Show going live in half an hour. Maximum. So if you're interested in sports, you can tune in there also. Smashy Sports. Thank you. Have a great day. See you after the weekend. Have a great weekend.